Big session number 10490, rule one.
Mr. Jenkins, rule one. Can you tell me, Mr. Jenkins, when it was and why it was that you joined the Navy?
Well, it was in 1936 I joined the Navy. The reason being we had trouble at home and my father died when I was 5 years old. That left my mother to look after my sister and myself. And we went into various homes, not Borsal homes or anything like that, but people to look after us, you know. And so in the end, I decided, well, I'd take one load off my mother's shoulders, was to join the Navy. So,
which part of the world did you come from, London?
I come from London, yeah, myself.
Whereabouts?
Eltham here. I've been born and bred in Eltham. That's 68 years, coming up to 69 years next June.
Was it easy to get into the Navy?
Well, yes, it was easy, because I still had me school things in my mind, you know. I hadn't long left school, so everything was near enough fresh, because I had to do exams, arithmetic and medical was the stiffest, which I passed well.
Whereabouts were you trained initially?
HMS Ganges, in just outside Ipswich in Suffolk.
What was the training like in those days?
Oh, it was very hard, actually. Everywhere you went, you had to double. And, I mean, even in the gym, they say don't walk, don't run, but fly. Even in the gymnasium with the PTI instructors, you know, that kind of... But it was good. I don't regret any of it, really, you know.
Was there any beating of the boys?
They did have what they called 10A, which was you had the kind of the birch across your backside, bent over one of them horses, them PT things, you know, and you had a doctor there, and the vicar was there, and you had it over the top of duck suit trousers. The sign of white suit, kind of a canvas trousers, you know.
What were boys beaten for?
Well, a couple of them was trying to escape, and you know, they've been doing something awkward. You know, you wondered how to smoke, nothing like that.
Why were they trying to escape, though? Because it was so bad?
Yeah, well, they didn't like it. It was the training, really. The boys' training there was hard. And
Do you think you were treated fairly?
It was fairly treatment. Oh, yeah. So whatever you did, I mean, you asked for, because they told you there and then when you started to, you know, you play ball with us and we'll treat you. But if you start any monkey business, we're going to come down hard on you. And which they did, you know. I mean, I've done several terms of what they call 8A. That's a kind of a punishment, where you're in a duck suit, old boots, and you had a rifle over your head like this all the time. And, you know, with your arms up, running, or shuffling, actually, the time you finished. Then in the end, you had a pole that you had to do it with, and then they gave you a few minutes break. You know, that was always a GI instructor. They were
GI,
they're gunnery instructors, and they gave you a few minutes break, and then you started off again. And any, like, Wednesdays was our payday, and in the evenings we had cinema show, and that kind of thing. Instead of you going there, you had to do extra work, like cleaning out the petty officer's mess or chief petty officer's mess or any such work that come in mind of the duty officer or the duty petty officer.
Did you resent the treatment?
No. No, not when you look at the what they're getting away with now, you know. I mean, it's actually, it'd do them good, really, for some of that treatment now. I don't think you'll find half the trouble, especially the skulk. I mean, they're not allowed to give them the cane, which I think is ridiculous myself. I mean, I had the cane several times at the Gorton School, but it was finished. Fingers were red hot.
So, when you finished your training, what did you specialise in?
In gunnery.
Did you choose to do that?
Yeah, it was a lot better. I enjoyed it, really. And I ended up as captain of the turret, of one of our turrets, you know, 15 crew. That counted the shell room and magazines. Because I passed all out the main part when I was in Chatham. The training in the boys was mostly for seamanship and, you know, bringing you out actually as a person.
Just going back to your training, did you have to climb the mast?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we had to climb the mast. They all came in our training about once a week. And they give you in all, a whole class of you, you're in sections of, I think it was four or six of us abreast, and you went up one after the other. And you had to do it in 3 minutes or under. And if you done it in over 3 minutes, you had to do it again. This time you had a PTI behind you, which made you move. And it was a bit frightening at first, but after a while you got used to it, you know. And you had certain people who used to climb up the last bit, 8 foot, to sit on the button. And they used to go up there for a smoke, actually. Some of the boys, you know, they got that used to it. You always got a few hard cases, you know, the devil may care type. Because they used to go up there and have a smoke and no one could see them, could they?
How dangerous was it going up the mast?
Well, it looked a bit dangerous, really, because you went up the first line of ratlins, and then you come what they call the devil's elbow. That's when it comes out and then goes in on a platform, and that's that bit when you're hanging out, really. You just have to rely on your grip, because you're hanging outwards and your feet could slip off, you know. Coming down wasn't so bad, really. Then you went up again and up another big length and up to the half moon, where you cross between the last of the mast and the extra piece that goes up with the lightning conductor and all that. You cross between that and then you came down again then.
Were you well fed?
Yeah, they made sure you had plenty of food.
Now, let's go on to the outbreak of war, and can you tell me what you were doing when war broke out?
Yes, I was on HMS Foxhound at the time. That was on a Sunday morning, and we all waited for this speech, which was going to be given at 11 o'clock, and with all the other ships in the harbour as well, the Home Fleet. And then the speech came, and after that I never see such a crowd of sailors so happy in all my life, because afterwards we had to cover all the bright work over with paint. And I mean, normally peacetime it's the other way round. You scraped all the paint off and to show all the bright work, which made it gleaming like, you know, proper peacetime. But this time we had to cover it all up, and old Jack was well away, wasn't he, on everything, you know.
Why was he so pleased to do that?
Well, it's made a change, didn't it, from polishing to get a pot and two and go over with Battleship Grey, you know. Or whichever colour was it was up against, you know. Because during the war we had all camouflage on our ship, you know. We had the Rising Sun, actually, when I was on the Havoc out in the Mediterranean, which was a big ball in the bows at the bottom, and it went off in rays right up through the ship, you know. And you've done that with lines of string or hemp covered in chalk and just pulled it and it hit the ship, you know, and you painted, they made the straight lines, you know.
What was the idea of the rising sun?
Well, for camouflage, so when you're in the distance, it cut off the bows and well, it made a hell of a difference in, you know.
To break up the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell me, was Norway the first time you were in action in the war?
Well, actually, when I was on the Ramillies, still as a boy, we was part of our training. We was had to do sea training on there for 3 months, and we was entering Gibraltar Harbour, and that was when the Franco-Spanish War was on at that time, 36, 37. And we was bombed then, entering harbour, because I mean it was all I think accidentally really why we was bombed, you know, because we had nothing to do with it really. It was the Franco-Spanish War, I think.
Which side was bombing you?
I think it was the Spanish.
Was it the Franco side or the Republican?
Well,
side?
We didn't know really. The planes were so high up, and see. Same with the Italians when they bombed us later in the war. We could hardly see the planes, you know, but they were expert at pattern bombing. So they used to run across like this, and then that way, then that way. I mean, it's got to get something, which it did 9 times out of 10, you know.
So they used to do it like a grid pattern?
Yeah, kind of a grid, yeah. We call it pattern bombing, you know.
Can you tell me about what it was like to serve on the Havoc? Was it a happy ship?
Oh yeah, very happy. Very happy ship.
Was it a comfortable ship?
Yeah, well, comfortable as the old type destroyers go, like not like they are nowadays, you know. Actually, I wouldn't like to be on them. There it is there, actually.
Why wouldn't you like to be on them? What was the
problem? I don't know, it's all... You got bunks and you got everything now. I mean, it's hardly, you don't, you're not like a seaman nowadays. Somehow you're more petted, I think, nowadays than what you were in those days.
What was it like then on a destroyer like the Havoc?
Well, half the time we never slept, well, we never took our clothes off, you know. We slept in our hammocks rough and all that kind of thing, grew beards and washing, I mean, that was out of the question until we got anywhere, you know.
So you got very dirty.
Yeah. But we lived through it, and we had to rough it. They don't rough it now. I don't think so myself. It's all done for them now, everything, isn't it? I mean, the mess deck, I mean, when you've got in a gale in the North Atlantic there, I mean, it, on a destroyer, and you get a sea coming in from the stern, which rolls right up the length of the ship, and it comes right through the into the mess decks, really, even over the trapdoor steps, you know, where the doors close, you still got a big iron step, you know, and it comes all the way in. The portholes leaked, used to come through there, you know. And half your gear was swishing about the floor, you know. And all your cups were broken, and the roll of the ship, and all your, what do you call, buzzers, peas, the old hard peas, you know.
The what?
Peas, which you eat, you know, split peas, not split peas, the ordinary peas, but hard peas, you know, which you had to soak overnight. They were all rolling around the floor, and, you know, and it took you about 2 or 3 days to collect all your gear back. Because you sat on your lockers, and the back seat had 2 bars across where you put all your shoes and God knows what in there, and they all came out, they ended up over the other side of the mess. Then they shout out, "Harry, there's your shoe here, what you've been looking for," that kind of thing. But alright, it was great myself, you know.
Can you tell me about going up to Norway?
Well, up to to Norway. Yeah, well, we was on patrols actually at the time. Us and I can't recall the other ships. And then they had a signal to come through that there were units of the German fleet in the different Tromso field or Narvik field. And so we all lined up, the five of us, eight boats, and we steamed in with a Norwegian pilot who took us in, darkened ship. All you could see is a little pin light from the ship astern to steer by, you know. And so you followed each other in, and we caught them napping, actually, because the ship that was out on patrol, German destroyer, was out on patrol, just gave in, said, oh, I've nothing doing tonight, and it was blowing a blizzard. It's about 5 to 4 in the morning, and the engineers, EA, that's the engine room artificers, they had to go around with steam jets and unfroze all the breech blocks, which was all frozen over, see, so we could get them working. So after a couple of hours after interaction, I mean, they were red hot then, see? But we caught them napping, you know. So the Hardy was Captain Warburton Lee. He was the, I think he was the second VC, naval VC of the war. Roop was the first one. I think he was on the Glowworm, which attacked one of the big cruisers and or rammed it. Roop, his name is, or Roop or something like that. And Captain Warburton Lee was the second, as I could make out.
So where was your action station?
Mine was in the after magazine. At the time, I looked after the shell room and the magazine, see.
What did you have to do?
Well, when they sang out for more cordite and more shells, so we put them in the old lifts and sent them up to the gun screws, X and Y gun.
So you were well down
below? Well, I come up the top after time, because I was in charge of the magazine, and I shouted a lot of the orders down as well, you know, being the banging and all that. They couldn't sometimes hear what was happening. So I saw quite a bit of it really going on, you know.
What did you see exactly?
Well, I saw one of the destroyers was hit by one of our, not his our torpedoes, but one of the other four ships. And then earlier on, before that, when we was going in, I never saw this part, but when we was going in, the Hardy, she fired a torpedo and hit a destroyer and happened to catch her magazine, and that blew up, and it took a little small oil tanker with it, and with that it took the other destroyer with it as well, the other side. So there was like three birds with one torpedo. And then later on in the action, I saw the Ruhefels, which was a big ammunition ship, all loaded up with mines and troops, the Ruhefels it was, and we blew that up ourselves, and that just, well, it just went apart, and there was big chunks of metal flying around, and they were all about 2 or 3 inches thick, which was the thickness of the mines, really. They were very thick, you know. And there was a lot of them. We caught a lot of the shrapnel on the deck, you know, and round.
Was anybody hit by the shrapnel?
No, I don't think so, no.
Did it do any damage?
What, to the ship? I think it caught the ship several times, pieces, you know, and that, around the bridge. Though. Oh, yeah, just superficial.
And did you see anybody in the water?
No, I never saw anybody in the water, but of course they did on the guns crews, because they were all open, you know, see? So they saw it all mostly, you know. But we did hear that they're supposed to load a boat from one of the other destroyers to pick up survivors, and one of the other German destroyer there fired on them. Both were done. I don't know how true that was. And this ship's captain and all that apt to see all this. And Well, he just went merry early. Just, I think he just more or less blew that destroyer out of the water.
Which ship was it that lowered the boat?
Oh, that we did. Well, I wouldn't know, really, because they were scattered all over the place, really. There's only five of us, you know, and of course, two of our ships were sunk. Well, they hardly ran aground, blazing from stem to stern, being hit.
Did you see that?
No, I never see that.
Did you see the other British ship heads?
No, they were in collision in their own smoke screen. It's such a small field, see, and they were covering themselves from the shore batteries, what I can make out. And of course, they happened to catch one of these destroyers, must have done. I think it was a hostile, I think, that was lost. Hostile and another one. There's only two of us, I think, came out of that. Five. Really?
Was the Havoc zigzagging around very much?
Oh, yeah, we had to zigzag around, and we fired all our torpedoes and in there. They said we had hits, and we sank several little merchant ships in the meantime, you know, because you don't see a lot of that, really, not down below, you know. I had to go down below several times, obviously, you know. I couldn't just sit up the top all the time.
So, how many rounds did you supply to your guns?
Well, we practically cleared all the magazines. They nearly ended up firing these wooden. What do you use for practice? We just had to keep a few back for going back, you know, when it all finished, if we were lucky to get back, for our own protection. All we had was star shell left, I think. And then,
Did everything go efficiently, or were there any hitches?
No, everything went well, really, considering.
What was the mood of the sailors on board the ship? Was it frightening, or...?
Well, it was frightening, because it's the first time everybody'd been in action, you know. And you get all these different buzzes going around the ship, you know, these people that's in the open, that can see things, you know. What was happening and all that. And
rumours
going round, you know.
Do you remember anything?
You know, what happened when they sunk a certain ship and how it blew up and, you know, the survivors or a lot of the ships of them, ship's company, were jumping in the water all alight, you know, from the flames. And because we didn't see hardly any of this, see. Because a lot of the EAs, they took photographs, or supposed to take them photographs, but we never heard no more about it after that. I don't know where the photographs come. We haven't seen none, not since. I've never heard of any, at any rate.
Was the Havoc damaged during this battle?
Just slightly damaged, that was all, really. That was mostly through shrapnel, you know, that was flying about and that, really.
Were any torpedoes fired at the Havoc?
That I don't know.
So you didn't see
that? No, I didn't see that, no.
What happened when it was all over, as far as the Havoc was concerned?
Well, the senior ship, what was left, we all allocated that different. There's two went in one field, and one went in another field to look around to see if there was any more. Then we all seemed to go out. And then what I can make out is that just ahead of us was the cruiser, the Effingham or something. I think it's called the Effingham. Told us to turn round and follow us in. They were going to do something or other, you know, and we followed them in, and as we followed them in, she ran aground, and she was used as a shore base battery, the Effingham it was. That was all what I can faintly recall of that ship.
Did you see it run aground?
No. And then we went out again, and we started patrol again, and next thing we knew was the battleships come up. This was on the the 10th of April was our battle.
The destroyer battle.
This, yeah. Then, of course, the time we finished and went out again, the battle fleet was practically coming into the field then, which was Admiral Whitworth, I think, on... Oh, I forget the name of the battleship. Yeah, it might have been the Warspite. And a lot of the other ships, of course, they cleared up all round and they made it what they termed as the second battle of Narvik, which we followed in, but I don't think we'd done any action in that, because they had all the tribal class with them then, you know, the latest type of destroyer. They were good, they were. And then we was told to go outside and patrol. And of course, in the meantime, the captain, Courage, which was Lieutenant Commander Courage, DSC, DSO, DSC, he found out afterwards that when we did venture into, I think it was Rosyth we went into, that his wife had died. Of course, that was a bit of a shock for us, you know. I mean, he took us all through this and all that, you know. And all us were being happy, and he was the only person that was more or less solemn, you know, which obviously it would be. It's a natural thing. Well, I think we all had a collection, and we were given a little bit of leave. I think what the term is, boiler clean leave. That's a watch to 2 or 3 days, you know, leave, or a week about sometimes. one watch, port or starboard, and then next time you went in, the opposite watch had so many days or the week's leave.
So when was the next time you were in action after Norway?
Well, in proper action was when we eventually was in the Mediterranean.
When did you go into the Mediterranean, do you know?
In the May of that year, 40, we went down to Plymouth and got all our tropical gear, and then we made our way with quite a few other ships and got into the Med, and then there we saw all the action then. We had it all on our plate, the lot.
This was when the Italians were pattern bombing you, was it?